Welcome, everybody, to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. This is Corinne, and I'm so grateful, as always, that we are all joined together to share in this time. So let's begin, as we always do, with a brief opening meditation. Just a reminder, if you have any background noise, if you could just mute your line by pressing *6, that would be fantastic. Turning our attention within to that place of willingness. And it can be a tiny speck of willingness. It doesn't have to be big. Willingness to see differently. Willingness to have peace. And willingness to experience miracles, those shifts in perception from fear to love. And as we connect with this willingness, even if it's teeny tiny, imagining offering this willingness to our inner teacher. However it is that you do that, whether it's a lifting up of that willingness, if it's a turning within and bringing your willingness to that inner altar, we're offering our willingness to our inner teacher to see differently. Trusting that we'll share whatever needs to be shared. We'll hear whatever it is we need to hear. Knowing that as we join together, we are strengthening these loving ideas for one another in our minds. This holy instant we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil, open mind, these are the gifts that Holy Spirit gives. And we place Spirit in charge tonight by our request. With the love in your heart and light in your mind, taking a nice mindful breath in and out, and coming together to our perception of right here, right now. Oh, alrighty. So, we are starting with chapter 19 tonight. So whatever edition of the book it is that you have, go ahead and open up to chapter 19. For those of us who might be joining us for the first time or newer to A Course in Miracles, I'm reading from the Sparkle edition, which means, actually, Alicia Vahani, I think there's a little noise coming from your line. It just sounded maybe like your microphone's a little close, if you wouldn't mind muting. Thank you so much. So I'm reading from the Sparkle Edition, which is one of the earlier versions of the course before it was edited into the Foundation for Inner Peace Edition, which is the most widely distributed edition. So if you're not sure what edition you have, you probably have the Foundation for Inner Peace Edition. Because I'm reading from Sparkle, occasionally you might notice that the editing is a little bit different, but it's largely the same at this point in the book. I did notice one place in this section where the paragraph breaks are different. So if I pause reading from the Sparkle, and for those of you who have FIP, if you're like, why is she stopping mid-paragraph? It's just because that's where the paragraphs end in the Sparkle edition. But no worry, we'll pick right up where we left off. So as always, the way that we do this is just to read a paragraph or two at a time, and we'll pause and share, and everybody is welcome to share. We're very conversational here, so there's a lot of wisdom on these calls, and I encourage everyone, if you feel moved, to do some sharing. So let's dive in. Beyond the Body is the subtitle in the Sparkle. If you have the FIP edition, it's called, it's chapter 19, The Attainment of Peace, Healing and Faith. So So here we go. We said before that when a situation has been dedicated wholly to truth, peace is inevitable. Its attainment is the criterion by which the wholeness of the dedication can be safely assumed. Yet we also said that peace without faith will never be attained. For what is wholly dedicated to truth, as its only goal, is brought to truth by faith. This faith encompasses everyone involved, for only thus the situation is perceived as meaningful and as whole. And everyone must be involved in it, or else your faith is limited and your dedication incomplete. So this first sentence, I'll just share a couple of thoughts that come up for me immediately. This first sentence, I have it underlined in actually all of my editions, as I have them all open in front of me. We said before that when a situation has been dedicated wholly to truth, peace is inevitable. And that has always been so comforting to me, that when we, whatever it is that we're facing, when we are willing to give that to Holy Spirit, or if you prefer another term, inner teacher, inner guide, language doesn't matter. When we give that over, when we're willing to experience truth instead, peace is inevitable. And that's just so reassuring for me. It goes on to talk about this idea of faith and how, yet we also said that peace without faith will never be attained, for what is wholly dedicated to truth, as its only goal, is brought to truth by faith. In other words, our very simple act of turning to Holy Spirit, even if we're only, we've joked before about, it really comes down to just saying, help! That is faith. That's turning to something that is beyond our, you know, sensory experience. That is a demonstration of faith. That willingness to turn to Spirit within is an example of the faith that we use all the time when we're practicing the Course. And I love then how it goes on to talk about how this encompasses everyone involved, for only thus the situation is perceived as meaningful and as a whole. So that, to me, just reflects, again, our interconnectedness, how as we allow our own mind to be healed, it's helping others. It's healing others because we are all one in truth, and so we have to be connected. So this, although it might seem like we're doing this work for ourselves, we are actually greatly, greatly helping others. I'll pause there. Anybody have any thoughts or questions come up so far?
I have a question, Corinne.
Sure.
Maybe you can just explain a little further about, I understand what you're saying about faith, even if it's a little bit and you're just turning to say help. But that sentence 3 in my version, kind of, I'm confused about that, where it says, yet we also said that peace without faith will never be attained. What does that exactly mean? That, does that mean that if I'm trying to create peace on my own power, it'll never, what does that exactly mean without faith?
Yeah, so that, I think what you just said is definitely one way of looking at it, trying to, like, make that peace happen on your own, you know, like you mm-hmm. of your small self is in control mm-hmm. and trying to get that peace, and it's just, that's not going to happen. Another way of saying that is that in a short while, we're going to be talking about faith and faithlessness, and faithlessness being an example of faithlessness being perceiving others as bodies, seeing others as limited to a body. So peace without faith, with it saying, we also said that peace without faith will never be attained, meaning to find peace, we have to be willing to look beyond what our body's eyes are telling us for true peace. That true peace doesn't come from anything that we can perceive in the world, because that's not where peace is from, because as the Course teaches, you know, everything that's happening out there is coming from our minds. So does that help?
So comforting, yes, so much. Yes, thank you.
Great, of course. Yeah, because if you think about it, if you stop at the body, if you stop at what our body's eyes behold and, you know, the things on the news and all the worldly events, how can peace possibly be attained? Really, how can it be attained? And so it's this willingness to see beyond the body that the peace has to come from. And that's I know that's been all of our experiences in, you know, their own ways for those of us who are on the call. So beautiful. Any other thoughts or insights or questions so far? Let's read the next paragraph. Every situation properly perceived becomes an opportunity to heal the Son of God. And for those of us who might be new to the Course, the Son of God is all of us. So every situation properly perceived becomes an opportunity to heal the Son of God. And he is healed because you offered faith to him, giving him to the Holy Spirit, and releasing him from every demand your ego would make of him. Thus do you see him free, and in this vision does the Holy Spirit share. And since he shares it, he has given it, and so he heals through you. It is this joining him in a united purpose which makes this purpose real, because you make it whole. And this is healing. The body is healed because you came without it and joined the mind in which all healing rests. So I want to actually bring up something that's coming up strongly for me in this paragraph that I actually shared last week. And it has to do with these first few sentences of this paragraph. And I shared last week, for those of you who were here last week, this will just be a quick refresher. And for those of you who weren't, in the Miracle Share Conference, there was a segment that John Mark Stroud, who's one of my favorite teachers, I interviewed him for this segment, and he talked about, in the Course, substituting the word freedom instead of the word love. So rather than saying, I love you, say, I free you. And immediately what's going to come up is all the ways that we don't want to set, like, another person free. You know, all the expectations we have, all the roles we want to hold them to, all those types of things. And so this paragraph is reminiscent of that for me, because it's saying, he is healed because you offered faith to him, giving him to the Holy Spirit, and releasing him from every demand your ego would make of him. So that is freedom, is being able to release those expectations, those demands that, you know, we think things should be a certain way, and then we'll be happy. So that was a big piece for me. And I'll just highlight one other sentence in this paragraph. Every situation properly perceived, the very first sentence. Every situation properly perceived becomes an opportunity to heal the Son of God. That's where, actually, before we started recording, we touched on this a little bit, that every situation, no matter what it is that we are facing, when we give that situation over to our inner teacher, to Spirit Within, we're repurposing the situation. So rather than that situation, rather than have it continue to be used by ego to convince us that we are these bodies and that we are separate from each other, by giving it to Spirit Within, we're repurposing it and opening up to allowing that situation instead to teach us that we are not these bodies and that love, and that only love is real.
Corinne, had an experience this week that I think relates to exactly what you're saying. My sister-in-law and I have known one another since we're like 11 years old, a whole history together. And she called me earlier in the week and said, we sold the house and we're moving to Florida. And I said, oh, that's wonderful. But on another level, I was like heartbroken. And, you know, I talked about using this this phrase, Holy Spirit, help me to forgive myself for using blank to separate from your love. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I kind of had a good cry over this, but I woke up in the middle of the night, and I just felt terrible. I just really couldn't get back to sleep, and I thought, wait a minute, I'm using this to separate. So I started repeating in my mind, Holy Spirit, help me forgive myself for using this situation with my sister-in-law to separate from your love, from your peace. If I said it once, I must have said it 100 times. Before I knew it, I was back to sleep. When I woke up in the morning, I was totally at peace with this situation. And I have felt totally at peace with the situation since then.
Mm.
And it kind of blows my mind that it could be just taken from me.
Right? That it can just fall away like that. Mm-hmm.
Taken. And honestly, and I know, I'll go visit her. I mean, it's not that. It's not that at all. It was taken.
Awesome.
It really was. It is awesome.
It is. And that's just, again, another example of a really profound experience in this laying, you know, another like foundational stone in your foundation of trust in Holy Spirit, in knowing, you know, truth rather than fear, rather than ego. I love it. Homeira, I'm actually hearing a little bit of background noise from your line.
Oh.
I wouldn't mind muting.
Sorry,
no problem. Thank you so much. Thank you. I can see little things on my computer screen.
Is that better?
Indicating. Yes. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you, Paula, for sharing that story, because that really is just another very profound learning that we can all benefit from hearing about it. So thank you.
The Holy Spirit isn't kidding, you know. This is a very practical application of using the Course, you know.
I agree.
It's amazing.
I completely agree. It's very practical. All right. Anybody else, or we can keep reading?
I have a comment.
Sure.
This is Leslie. I really love the idea of I'm going to try that, of repeating, you know, that message about forgiving myself, because what I feel like happens with me is when I say it, it's like just the one time or just a couple of times, I feel like it needs more, I don't know, more oomph, like as if my ego structure is still too resistant, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so I just think that's a beautiful way of kind of like softening my edges, to be able to just simply repeating that. I'm like, what a breakthrough. So thank you for telling us about that.
It
awesome.
It works, and it does. It blocks the ego. And you let go of ego resistance, because the mind can't serve two masters. You can't think that and think an ego thought at the same time.
Right. I'll add too, and whatever words we use, it all works. So, Paula, I love how you worded it. We've talked about that's a prayer that comes from Nook Sanchez, and she has one other little part in there too. Holy Spirit, help me to forgive myself for using blank to attack myself and to separate from your love.
Yes.
Attacking yourself is that one piece that is really powerful for me too, because when we are judging, when we're caught in fear, whatever it may be, even when we're believing, you know, what the body's eyes are showing us, which is probably most of our waking day, we're attacking ourself with a capital S, meaning we're trying to keep the ego part of the mind, the small self is trying to keep the awareness of the capital S self away, because if we fully identified with that capital S self, we would not need to listen to the ego at all, and it knows that. So I just thought I'd share that one little piece in that prayer too. That's been so helpful for me. All right, how about we keep reading? So I have a subheading here. I know there's no subheading in the FIP edition, but it's called Healing in the Mind in the Sparkle edition. The body cannot heal because it cannot make itself sick. It needs no healing. Its health or sickness depends entirely on how the mind perceives it and the purpose which the mind would use it for. And it is obvious that a segment of the mind can see itself as separated from the universal purpose. When this occurs, the body becomes its weapon, used against this purpose to demonstrate the fact that separation has occurred. The body thus becomes the instrument of illusion, acting accordingly, seeing what is not there, hearing what truth has never said, and behaving insanely, being imprisoned by insanity. It's funny that we just talked about that Nook Santa's prayer with that one piece about attacking oneself, because this is sort of what this is saying. So this is talking about how the body in and of itself is wholly neutral. It's completely neutral. Because A Course in Miracles is teaching us that, you know, this level of form is not real. It's not truth. Everything is on the level of the mind. Abstract thought. Pure love is what we truly are. We're not these physical entities. So, however, when the mind decides that it wants to push away awareness of our oneness and fixate on these separate bodies, that's when this is saying that, you know, the body ends up being used on behalf of ego, meaning that the body and all of its, you know, care that it needs, all of its issues, whether it's health, sickness, whatever it is, these become, by the ego, it's evidence that we must have separated from God, because this is so seemingly real, because it freaking hurts, because it, you know, it's so compelling. It's used as that quote-unquote evidence by the ego that, look, you have to be a body because look at this. Look at how painful this is. So that's what it's talking about here in this paragraph, with the body becoming an instrument of illusion, acting accordingly, seeing what's not there, that it's the mind that's decided to listen to ego, to listen to, you know, lies that we are separate and that we actually pulled off the separation. And so we have essentially become identified with thinking that this is what we are. And just look through the body's eyes, and anything that you see is evidence that we must have separated. That's how the ego uses it. And thank goodness there's a way out. So any thoughts or insights come up so far with this paragraph? You know, I'll share, as all of you, I think, know, I got into A Course in Miracles because of my significant anxiety issues. And looking at anxiety this way was just so helpful for me, that anxiety for me and whatever our hooks are, you know, whether it's some kind of pain or a relationship problem, whatever tends to trip us up the most, it could be, you know, lack, not having enough of whatever, these are the arguments, these are the compelling witnesses that the ego throws forth to try to keep us convinced that this is all there is. And that's all it is. And so that's where our freedom lies. That's where I found freedom, is realizing that that was the purpose of the anxiety, was to just keep me thinking that I'm just this body, that I'm just Corinne. And once I could start to see a different purpose through, you know, spirit's purpose, letting it be used on behalf of helping me wake up, that's when I started experiencing peace again. it started slowly coming back to my awareness because it actually never left.
Hi,
Debbie.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to thank you for allowing me this opportunity. I have lots of issues around this. I'm only going to bring up one in particular. When I mentioned to my course student friends about my teacher, Ken Wapnick, who had lung cancer, I keep asking, and I can't get an answer about this. If you're not familiar with him, he was part of the editing of the initial course,
mm-hmm.
and a teacher. And I keep asking, if your mind is healed, why does he have lung cancer? Or is not that the form it took, and what matters is not the form, but the fact that as his body was getting ready to pass, he kept saying, I'm not dying. Is it not perceiving the symptoms as an illness? It's just been a confusion for me, and unfortunately, I haven't been able to get any resolution. And again, I'm just throwing that out there. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. You know, Debbie, I'll be completely honest with you that I had sort of struggled a bit with the same question. And, you know, I the first thing that I think we need to keep in mind when we're thinking of a specific case, whether it's Ken or whether it's somebody else, is that we don't know what anything is for. We have to remember that we can't judge. We don't know where he was truly at. We don't know. And so coming back to that teaching of A Course in Miracles, that I don't know what anything is for, and not judging the form in which someone transitions, I think is important for us. At the same time, the Course is very clear that... Now, we read it, I feel like we read it maybe we didn't read it. Maybe I just brought the quote up. Let me see if I can find it as I am on the computer right now and I can just search some keywords. The body is laid aside. It's neither sick nor old. There's a whole, here it is, I found it. Oh, this isn't it. I have to actually, I don't want to hold us up, but there's a quote in the Course that talks about how when the body is no longer needed, it's simply laid by. It's neither sick nor old nor, you know, hurt. It's just laid by because its usefulness is over. And the Course talks about how when the mind is healed, that, you know, I think we've all experienced, or at least I have, and I shared this last week on the call, that I had been a little bit obsessive over a physical pain. And when I say obsessive, it was like the residue of an old pattern. So it wasn't really obsessive, but it was this, what's this, what's going on? And when I recognized, based on opening to a Course quote, that this was stemming from unconscious guilt in my mind, and I started working, reminding myself that there's no guilt in me, sitting with Holy Spirit, long story short, the pain evaporated. It had been there for days, and it was just gone. So the body being neutral does act as, you know, the mind directs, and as the mind heals, the Course is saying that the body does too, and yet we have to not judge, and the Course tells us over and over, I have it right here on my wall, to not judge the picture. There's that prayer, take this from me and look upon it, judging it for me. Let me not see it as a sign of sin and death, nor use it for destruction. Teach me how not to make of it an obstacle to peace, but let you use it for me. This is where we can't if we get hung up with the form in which somebody exits, it's going to just be a place for confusion. Now, I highly recommend that you check out the work of Nook Sanchez. Nook does a lot. She's going so deep with particularly the course's teachings about death. And really, what's coming through her is just extremely profound. And so I can't really offer more than that at this point, except to just remind us, you know, to practice not judging, whatever form it may be, but also the course's teaching, you know, of telling us that the body is neutral and that it will just be laid aside peacefully when it's no longer needed. And peacefully is, you know, a key word there. So I think, and actually, Debbie, if you want to reach out to me, I don't know if you have my email address, you very well may, but if you sent me an email, I can see if I can find one or two of Nook's blogs that can be helpful that I've read before that I wouldn't be able to find at this moment, but I could direct you in that direction.
Oh, thank you, Corinne. Well, I just finished her book.
Oh, good.
So I totally agree. She has insights that have helped me tremendously. This is a personal struggle. My mother is in hospice, and I have not let go of some issues regarding the end of life. And again, I'm not going to bog anybody down with what I'm dealing with, but it's something that I need to continue studying the course to help me in that respect. But yes, Nook is amazing, and thank you for that. I appreciate your feedback.
Of course. Thank you so much for bringing this up.
The phrase, the end of life, I think is the problem.
It's so funny that you're saying this, Paula, because I was going to go here.
Yeah.
Go on.
There's no end of life. There's no end.
Our problem is our belief in death. I mean,
our
one problem is that we believe that we're separate.
Life is eternal.
Nook teaches that the belief in death is the core belief that holds this whole ego dream together. And so every time you are feeling like you're looking at some kind of end of life issue, there's the moment to say, "Oh, holy!" So, you know, Holy Spirit, there's my belief in death again. There's my belief in death again. I'm willing to look at this with you. Start to unearth, exhume those beliefs in death in all the forms that they take, and be willing to not keep them hidden. Be willing to question them in the light of love, because that's really how we progress. That's really how we experience miracles, is by not holding on to anything, including the belief in death.
And I'm going to add this. I'm going to jump in here and add this.
Go for it.
Holy Spirit, help me to forgive myself for using death, the idea of death, to attack myself and keep me separate from your divine love and peace and
beautiful
confidence and security and
that's good. Thank you, Paula, for adding that.
Thank you both.
Hello.
Thank you. And you know, the problem with my last teleconferences is I'm, maybe because I'm a New York Jew, but I was a naysayer, a doubter, a pessimist, and I don't want to bring anybody down, but I have no one has come back to tell me that there is no death. And I don't want to do this with this group either. I just have questions, and I never want to bring that up if it's going to upset people and bring in negative energy. It's solely my issue. But no one ever comes back and tells me you know, that, and I'm sorry if I'm bringing up something that is, you know, in conflict with this, because the last thing I want to do with students of the course is to bring in questions that may be, you know, negative. I don't mean that at all. I'm sorry if I am.
No, thank you. No. Thank you so much for sharing. And just, again, that statement that no one ever comes to tell me, you know, that there is no death. I'm assuming you're speaking about people who have passed.
Yes.
Yes. Just that statement, no one ever comes. If you believe that, nobody's going to come. if you keep that you know, belief in the mind, then it's not going to happen. So that's another belief to question. That's another belief to say, hey, Holy Spirit, here's my belief that nobody's going to come and tell me. I didn't share this on the call last week, and I'm going to share this right now because it feels like the right thing to do. And Debbie, I want to be clear. I'm not trying to convince you of anything, because this has to come through our experience, all of us. That's why I love the Course so much, is that it says, don't believe a thing. Do it and let the word speak for themselves. I don't know if anyone on the call, I'm assuming some of us, knew Joe Wolf. Joe Wolf was the founder of Spirit Light Outreach, who he spent at least 10 years in prison, and at least of those 10 years, it was 3 or 4 years, it was something ridiculous, he spent in solitary confinement. He described himself as a bad boy, and the first time I met Joe was at the Course in Miracles conference in Chicago. Instantly just loved him. The kindness that just poured through his eyes was just, it just hit you in your heart immediately, and I just felt such a bond with him. He passed away very suddenly. I think it was last week. I don't have the exact date. But
last
it was
week,
very
I have, the, I have
it was,
the email.
Okay. And I actually, one of the stories that he shared in his story, which actually you could hear him talk about this, if you go to the Miracle Share YouTube channel, he shared about his experience in the 2014 Miracle Share conference. He had very profound spiritual experiences when he was young and also when he was in prison. And one of the beings that came to him, had no idea who this was, but later on down the road, he was outside of a store and saw a statue. I think it was like some kind of Asian store, saw a statue and was like, who is that? And they said that that's Kuan Yin, and I don't even know Kuan Yin's role in Asian spirituality, but he's like, that's who came to me, like that's who I saw. And my Facebook post was giving a little tribute to him, just, you know, expressing my my love for him, and that if Kuan Yin can come visit him, I hope he'll stop by sometime and pay me a visit. I didn't expect it to be so soon. It was the next day that I wasn't even in meditation, but I was quieting my mind. My eyes were open, sometimes they were closed, and I experienced what was sort of a light in my peripheral vision, and I felt this warm, love, intense peace. There's no words, and I knew it was him, and I said, like, hi, Joe, and I just felt this, again, there's no words. So we have to open ourselves to having experiences like that in order to have them. So I would just encourage you to be willing to even question that statement, and not even be willing that maybe you can be taught in some other way, you know, maybe that it doesn't have to happen that way for somebody to come to you, but that it can be some other way. I know reading end of life, near-death experiences have been super helpful for me, but I'll stop there. I just felt moved to
just
share that for
so
all
much.
Of us who knew Joe, and I've been at peace with his passing since then, so... Thank you.
Well, Linda Wisniewski is the one I've been mourning, who was part of Pathways of Light, who is now in hospice. When I said at the beginning of the call, I can't connect with them right now because I'm in mourning for her, and she's one of the people who is in Pathways of Light, but I am deeply grateful for that, what you've said, Corinne. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Debbie. Thank you so much. I actually, I'm grateful we're talking about this because obviously we need to, and it's all coming up for a reason. So,
Corinne,
keep reading. Oh, yes, is that Homera?
Yes, thank you for everybody's share, and I'm so appreciative of the, sorry, I didn't get your name, the lady who just asked about the death thing. It's really like also helping me as we talk about this because, as I've, I think, mentioned in previous calls, my father's had a number of strokes, and, you know, he's come to very close to death. And, you know, it's been a big struggle of mine, the conditioning or the patterning around death and dying. I know it's difficult for all of us, but I think part of, even for me as being like Persian, it's even deeper. It's almost like there's such a taboo around death, and you don't really talk about it until somebody dies. And when they do, it's like the mourning takes months and months and sometimes years. And so this is really, really helpful. But it's so interesting, Corinne, when you talk about it's this one mind that we share, because as you were reading the second paragraph and you were talking about that love is freedom, as you read that second paragraph, I was thinking of my brother, who also I've shared before about, you know, having addiction problems and substance abuse. And you know, where it said, and he is healed because you offered faith to him, giving him to the Holy Spirit and releasing him from every demand your ego would make of him. And that's exactly, before you even said that, that thought came to my mind, is I need to free him from all my demands. Because, and then the other thought that came to me before you talked about that was that, you know, I don't know what anything means. I don't know what this means. I don't know what his addiction, I don't know what it's going to lead to, because my mind would take me, it's going to kill him. He's going to die. And, you know, but I don't even know what death is. So all this talk has been really, really healing for me. And I just want to say thank you very much to everybody and you, Corinne.
Thank you. And I thank you for sharing that you had those thoughts before we read them, because I feel like that happens a lot on these calls, and that's just further evidence for me, you know, that there is one mind, that we're all connected. And when you're healed, as the Course says, when you're healed, you're not healed alone. So thank you for sharing that. Let's read the next paragraph. Was there anybody else, actually, before I read that? I wasn't sure if I...
I wanted to say something on this topic.
Sure.
Is Shiva. Number one, I can relate to everything that has been said here. Just because the idea, if we know, I mean, we learned that death equals, you know, what we know it to be, and so it's hard to undo that relation, that connection. But there's something that I read in the Course a while ago, and I pulled it up. And it, in this part, it just kind of talks about in relation to the teacher of God, which I'm imagining just, well, and I want to just, it's just a few sentences here that I want to read, because I think it kind of speaks to, well, this is something that I read to help me when, especially when I see spiritual leaders or people who I perceive as very enlightened. I'm like, why are they getting sicknesses? Why are they getting illnesses? But this right here really helps me, as well as the terminology. So it says, sometimes a teacher of God may have a brief experience of direct union with God. In this world, it is almost impossible that this endure. It can perhaps be won after much devotion and dedication, and then be maintained for much of the time on earth. But this is so rare that it cannot be considered a realistic goal. If it happens, so be it. If it does not happen, so be it as well. All worldly states must be illusory. And this is the part that really stood out to me. If God will reach directly in sustained awareness, the body would not long, the body would not be long maintained. So that's just something that it helps me. And that last part about in terms of to the terminology, the body would not be long maintained. That's a truth that I can wrap my mind around, and that's what has been helping me, because essentially that's what we are saying when we say death. I still can't, I know for myself, it's still hard for me to say, oh, this didn't happen, this what I perceive as death didn't happen, and there's never any death. But this little line right here has been helping me to make peace with that reality by shifting from saying death. Well, I say it, but just in my mind, shifting my perspective from that to the body cannot long be maintained. And as far as people who we consider to be really advanced, having sicknesses and illnesses, just understanding that it could be that the more advanced you are, that the physical body can't contain the level of power and energy that's flowing through you, and so it breaks down in order to free you, to free your soul, to free your spirit. And so, yeah, that's what came up for me, and I'm so glad, you know, you brought that up, Debbie, and everyone, because it's something I've been thinking about and trying desperately to make peace with, because I've been afraid of death for a long time, and it's only now that I'm starting to have glimpses of peace regarding
Alicia,
it.
Where,
so thank
where
you.
Where are you reading that from? Is that in the
It's in the teacher's manual under God can, and the question is it's under can God be reached directly?
Boy, that is fantastic. I've read it before,
but
you really brought it home.
I'm so glad you brought that up, Alicia. That's really, really valuable. Love it.
Thanks for letting me share it. It's helpful.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you shared that. And you inspired me also to share the quote that I mentioned before about the body. It's actually lesson 294. It comes from the lesson, My Body is a Holy Neutral Thing. It says, its neutrality protects it while it has a use, and afterwards, without a purpose, it's laid aside. It's not sick, nor old, nor hurt. It's but functionless, unneeded, and cast off. So that's another one that's been helpful for me also. So thank you, Alicia, mm-hmm. for sharing that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Also
wonderful. Deidre, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, the Course refers to the true use of the body as a communication device, right? So we don't know what the curriculum is and what the curriculum is supposed to look like. We think we do, but we actually don't. Our higher self knows. And we've been talking about Nuke, and I just feel called to mention, she's had several blog posts where she talks about her relationship with her partner, Tomas, who transitioned. And she shares very candidly about how in her mind, she expected a healing to occur. And in her mind, a healing meant that Tomas would stay in the level of form, and there would be a healing, and it would look like there would be no more issues with the body. And so when Tomas passed, transitioned, she had what she calls a dark night of the soul, where she had all of these questions. And through all of this, she came to realize that she was being shown a totally different way of looking at what she was perceiving about death. And this is what she talks about in her book, The End of Death. But what really is so profound about her story is she talks about how the relationship, even though Tomas is no longer here on the level of form in the body, like that we see with our eyes, you know, that we think the body is the true identity, right? But she talks very openly about how their relationship now, because he's no longer confined by the body, is even stronger than it was in form. And as someone who is a medium, I can really relate to that. And so, like Corinne was talking about before, we need to have personal experiences with that. It's the only way to really have it come home and be known as the truth of who and what we are. And the reason why I bring that example up is she didn't know the wisdom in Tomas transitioning exactly the way that he transitioned until afterwards, until after going through the dark night of the soul and coming through the experience. So I just felt called to share that bit.
Oh, thank you, Deidre. That's so helpful. And I'm so glad that you brought that up, because I was thinking, too, about how she said at one point, and I don't remember where I heard her say this, but that, yes, she had those ideas as to how a healing should look, and afterwards realizing that he had to transition the way that he did, or else she wouldn't have kept going deeper.
Right,
actually,
exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, the fact is, I have what you just said, Deidre, how they can actually be more helpful in when they pass. That my mother and I had a very odd relationship. I mean, it was kind of a love-hate sort of thing, but she was a wonderful, wonderful, kind woman. But the dynamics between us was uneasy a lot of the time. And before she passed, I think she knew, she was pretty good right to the end, but she said to me about a month before she passed, what are you going to do with your father if something happens to me? My father was a very demanding man. And it just sort of made me sick when she said that, but I kind of didn't really take it to heart. But when she did pass, my father became a real problem in my life. And she is actually my path. She was my path to the Course in Miracles. It became so intensely uncomfortable with my father that for the first time in my life, I actually got to a point where I remember saying to my husband, we were going to New Hope for a weekend just to get away because I was so distraught. And I said, I can't go back. I can't go home. And that line, just that willingness on some level, it wasn't even a conscious level, but all of a sudden I realized I didn't know what to do anymore. I didn't have the solution. I didn't know. And within a very short period of time, I wind up in a bookstore in New Hope, and I'm looking for some kind of self-help book. And the woman, I was at the counter, and there were tapes on the counter, you know, this was before CDs. There were tapes, and this woman who was working behind the counter handed me The Course in Miracles Through Forgiveness, and she said to me, I think you need this. And I said to her, I need something, and I immediately bought it. And when I got home, I had never heard of The Course in Miracles. I had no idea what it was, but when I didn't have a tape player with me, but when I got home, I popped that thing in the cassette. I listened to it for 5 minutes, and I knew that was the answer, and I knew my mother made sure I got it.
Mm-hmm.
And
I got goosebumps.
I'm telling you, it that whole situation with my father and my sister, the dynamics, the whole thing changed. Everything changed.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
it all turned out really quite wonderful in the end, because
mm-hmm.
but she that love, but that was an experience. I can talk about that experience. You have to have the experience to really
Definitely.
Understand it.
And that's what the course is setting us up for, as we withhold nothing from Spirit Within. As we become willing to question all of our beliefs, all of our perceptions, everything. So, yay! I'm giving you all a big group hug. Thank you so much for being here. This is so helpful for me, so helpful, I'm sure, for all of us. So, we're at the top of our time together. I love you all, and I'll see you all next weekend.
I love you, too.
Love you all.
Bye, everybody.
Love you.
Good night.
Thank you.
Love you.